Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Hey everyone, Yas here, and I just wanted to say it's great to have you join me today because I'm sure we're going to have a fantastic episode. So whether you're here for the first time or if you're one of the repeat loyal listeners of the show, I truly appreciate you. But before we get to today's guest, I just have a small favor to ask, and that's if you could just take a brief moment to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Ensure that you share it with all your coaching friends, and don't forget to get in touch, guys. Let me know your thoughts on what you think of today's episode or any of the recent episodes you've listened to. You can do this on Twitter at The Coaches Net. Once again, that's at The Coaches Net. And please make sure you do, as I'd love to hear your thoughts, guys. Anyway, on to today's show. I hope you enjoy it. Have a great day, guys.
The Coaches Network.
Hey guys, you're now listening to the Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA licensed football coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy. Developing the future goalkeeper, where does your mind go to straight away then, Jared?
Well, for me, I want to know, and be interested to the people that are joining in and listening, what does the future goalie look like? So I think, first of all, we've got to have a very clear idea of the type of player that we want and how we want them to play. What's our game idea? So for us, we want our goalies to, they're a part of the team, not from the team. So that it's not, they are the 11th man, they are the 9th man, they are the 7th man, they are the, depending on what format you're in. So they're not separate. And because of that, they've got the advantage that they can use their hands, of course. But really, it's, can we build out? Can we be unorthodox? What's their decision-making on when to be a sweeper, almost like a fly goalkeeper? And I think if we're looking at the future goalie, it's only going to get more challenging because the game's moving quicker. Technical proficiency of players is getting better and better. The physical qualities of players are getting better and better. So there's challenges there, right? And I think with goalkeepers, there's a thing that we talk a lot about, which is like this metastable region. What's that region where if the ball's coming, do I come out and attack that ball or do I not? And there's certain moments where it's like, actually, I can go and affect that and I've got a high start position, I can come out. And there's others where it's, I can't. So I think that's the interesting one, right? And how does that link to how we want to play? You know, what are we looking for from our goalkeepers in those moments? They can, of course, use their hands. How are they using that? We want them to be able to have proficiency in catching, throwing, and parrying. I think being able to make big saves in big pressure moments is a huge one. And being able to deal with the adversity. But it comes back to the game, they're an outfield player. They have to be able to use their feet. They have to. So I think for the future goalkeeper, it's, have they got the ability to deal with that adversity and deal with those challenges?
Yeah, no, I think it's quite interesting, obviously, because, you know, we're constantly talking about what does the future player look like? What does the future goalkeeper look like? But I think the reality is, it's just a bit of a guessing game, really, is it? So I think there should be still a really big lens on the present and identifying, right, what are the current trends of the game, what are the current things that are going to be there, and what are the things that have always stayed consistent. So I think when it comes to, you know, I guess, you know, I'm playing a bit of devil's advocate here, but when it comes to developing a future goalkeeper, I think a part of it's always is just consistently doing the things that have always been there. So it is those different pieces that you've talked about just now in terms of, you know, those capabilities, whether you're looking at it through the model that you guys are using over there or we're using over here. You know, the FA's got the model around the 6 capabilities and, you know, the technique, timing, movement, deception, positioning and scanning. But actually, those are just as relevant for the goalkeeper as they are for the fat outfield players. And, you know, in my own experiences, I've looked at it through the lens of kind of 3 key areas that we kind of, you know, really want to look at. And it's, what are their behaviours? So in other words, those six capabilities are those behaviors which they're going to kind of exhibit. How well do they use those six capabilities to assess? So you've got behaviors, assessment, and execution. So the assessment is, right, the decision-making piece, right? Where, when, how, why, and who, right? And you follow it through that model with that execution piece to make sure that you're hitting the timing right. And I think all in all, those capabilities will, you know, take themselves across that. And I think then it's just coming back to your point earlier about them being the 9th, 10th, or sorry, the 9th, 11th, the 7th, or whatever man in the game that they're playing in. Well, what does that game look like? What do the capabilities of the goalkeeper look like in that game? What are the actions and the game behaviours? And how did they present themselves in that game? So, you know, as an example, you might play 4v4, but actually what are the different actions that they might not necessarily get from an 11v11, or what are those different actions they might not get across the different formats, and what are the actions that are consistent? So I think it's to start with, obviously it's contextual and it's depending on the age groups and the stage of the player that you're working with, but fundamentally start by stripping back what are the things that stay consistent. And the things that stay consistent is, well, they've got to protect the goal, and within what you've just said around them being an outfield player, fundamentally, well, they've got to have the same capabilities to an extent as an outfield player. They've got to have the same technical attributes as an outfield player. It's no different. I mean, the only thing that you might question and put a question mark over, rather, and even then, I'm not sure if you really would, because, you know, fundamentally, if there'll be some crossover, is when you get to the finishing part. But in terms of passing, receiving, dribbling, because these are all parts of the game, even the modern day goalkeepers, you know, there's a lot of heading going on with many goalkeepers picking up aggressive and, you know, adopting higher start positions, not just in terms of being able to defend the goal, but actually defend the space in between the goal and behind the defence. So being on that front foot, ready to go, I think there's so much in there in terms of what that looks like. But in terms of developing the future goalkeeper, I think we should start with the present qualities and the consistent things that have been of the past and the present. I don't know what your thoughts are on that, though.
No, there's loads there, isn't there? I mean, ultimately, I know with the goalkeeper and some of the stuff we're going to talk about in the webinar, you know, it's, you've got your position, you've got your communication, you've got your scanning. How are those things influencing each other? And the goalkeeper right now, we've really got to think about, well, what, and again, he's playing a crystal ball, but how do we want our players to play? So you referred to certain qualities that they have to do, and you talked about high start position and things like that. Well, the game's changed a lot. Like, the rules that were introduced had a huge impact on the development of the goalkeeper, with one of the first being around the back pass rule. And then you look at to modern day, where it's restrictions on where their feet can and can't be on a PK, or where their feet, or not even just the feet, what they can do on a reconstruction of a goal kick. So we can obviously have attacking players receive inside the penalty area, whereas before you couldn't. So how that's changed considerations and behaviour. There's a lot. I'm almost thinking, well, if you could, you know, predict what the future game looks like, what would you want it to look like? Because I still remember coaches years ago designing practices where players could receive inside the penalty area. And again, they're doing that now. And that was almost like a decade in advance. VAR, everyone saw that one coming, right? You know, there's famous videos of Sir Alex Ferguson and several people back in the day, even in the early 90s and 2000s, predicting and calling for VAR and how that'll influence the offside, how that'll influence goal technology, goal line, things like that, and how that influences behaviour. So I think what we need to do is, you almost have to have an eye in the future, because that there's a piece there. The other piece that we can probably control a little bit more, because we don't know what we don't know. We don't know what's going to happen. But what we can control is what we do now. If we're designing practices where the goalkeeper is getting peppered with shots from a volley, a drop ball, and we're designing activities where we're developing them to be prepared for training, and we're preparing them to meet the demands of training versus preparing them to meet the demands of the game. And by that, I mean that they're, of course, going to take more shots and have more challenges in a game because of the design of the activities. in a training session, in a practice, because they're getting peppered from different angles, different choices, different selections. Whereas in a game, the frequency and the type of shot or service or action situation that they have to deal with is different and varied. And it also comes at different intervals, different times. So there's a bandwidth thing, there's a reaction thing, but there's also the ability to concentrate when nobody's watching, right? For long periods, because your team is sustained possession. Then all of a sudden, you might not have had to deal with anything for several minutes. And then all of a sudden now you're called upon and the spotlight's on the goalkeeper and it's hard. So I think, do our practices really replicate those demands? Or is it just high intensity? I'm going to volley balls at you. I'm going to shoot balls from a static position. I'm going to do X, Y, Z. Is that really developing the goalkeeper for, one, the demands of the game, and two, the demands of the future? How can we design activities where, if we've got a very clear idea in how we want our players to play, and we recognise that the future goalkeeper has to be even better, even skilled at anticipating danger, and anticipating danger early, not only from a shot stopping, but from a general outfield perspective, they have to be able to be, it's almost like having a sweeper. We look at a lot of the goalkeepers now, they've got higher star positions in some instances than centre-backs. It's not unusual. It's not new. Fabian Barthez used to do a lot of actions back in the day that people probably won't remember. The game obviously goes in cycles, but there is a demand that these players are the outfield player. They have to be able to be connected with the units and with the game. So are you designing activities where they can receive and play out and they're working on their feet? They're working on how they construct the attack, but then the team's lost possession. Now what? Where are their movements now? Are we working on actions where they might have to deal with a shot, but then they're thinking about the next action because they've not parried it, they've saved it, we've got hold of it. Now, are they running and playing a ball with the hands out from the back? Or they're self-serving and they're throwing it to themselves and they're having to dribble and dribble the way out of trouble to play into somebody. Are we constructing environments where they have to deal with those scenarios? How important is the goalkeeper in your game model, in your game idea, in your game style, in your principles? So they're questions that coaches really need to ask themselves first. And then from that, you can probably go to, you know, the other stuff, because I do feel that a lot of the activities don't elicit the behaviours that we really want them to be able to do in a game. Do you know what I mean, Yaz? You know? Like, for example, how many times are they diving to the right versus the left? Maybe there's a dominance there. And if you were to look at it, you're like, yeah, actually, I've served a lot of balls on that side. I haven't really worked on them on the other side. And also, why are they doing these actions where they're doing fast feet in and out of cones and ladders and stupid stuff to then do a hoppity hop before they make the save? Where are they going to do that in a game? How are they recognising the cues, the triggers, the information within the environment to recognise the moment how they can adapt their body to deal with that situation? Well, the only way they're going to do that is if we put them in situations where they have to search for information. So I think that's a starting place for developing the future keeper. I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but it does frustrate me when I see environments that, you know, we've gone from design a lot of game-like experiences, inquiry-based learning, but then the keepers, it's like, oh yeah, you guys go over there in the corner and we're going to pepper shots at you and you're going to get better at your decision-making. You know, I just don't think it works like that.
Yeah, I think there's so much in there. I think, you know, fundamentally we talk about the realism. How real is the practice, you know, both in terms of content, in terms of intervals, in terms of spacing, of actions and combination of actions, really. You know, you one of the things I always say, well, look, you got sessions, you know, we talk about high repetitions, we want to get those high repetitions, but how many saves does a goalkeeper actually make in a game? Whereas if you go back to the model I talked about earlier, when you break it down into three sections, if you talk about their behaviors, their assessments, and then the execution of the decisions, well, there's probably a lot more behaviours taking place than saves themselves. So I think if you can look at it through that lens, then you start to ask yourself, well, rather than gearing the session or designing the session, if you like, around the number of saves or repetition of saves, can we make it a focus to get a conscious repetition and conscious focus on what repetitions we're getting in terms of the behaviours? So how often are they scanning? How often are they moving and readjusting and positioning themselves? How often are they, you know, having to step up and drop off? How often are they having to look to, you know, play out from right to left, or play out through, over and you know, beyond, or whatever that looks like? And I think if you start to gear it around that and get those behaviors repetitive rather than the constant being the number of saves, then I think you're onto a bit of a winner. Because let's be honest, I'm, you know, on average, probably goalkeeper, you know, if you're lucky, especially at the top end as well, if you're making more than 6 or 7 saves a game. Well, then if you compare that, you know, 6 or 7 saves a game in a, you know, 90-minute fixture, you're probably getting 6 or 7 saves in the space of a minute in your session. So how realistic is that? So I think it's just looking at, again, like I said, the space and the intervals and the combinations and the actions that take place within your sessions, and asking yourself, well, how realistic is it based on how we're kind of configuring our practices? And then, you know, I think that, you know, the most common way to look at it is, how do you start to create situations where the goalkeeper is not just the body in the goal, they actually are, you know, if we're going to practice what we preach, and they are going to be the 11th man, if you like. How do we create sessions that design them to be that? How do you create sessions and integrate them within the team that allows them to be that? And I think that's probably the starting point for me. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
No, I agree. Disagree. I think we've got to think about them beyond just being a body in the goal, processing the ball out of the net. That's one part of the game, but it's not the only part. And we've got a duty of care, really.
And then there's probably another thing, which is, you know, we've perhaps even jumped steps. If we're talking about really developing the future goalie, well, how do you first become a goalie? What's your introduction to goalkeeping as a player? Where does it start? What's the entry point? Because I think that's a piece that I'd love to get your thoughts on it, and anyone in the room, because as we're having this now where we've got these kids that are just genuinely enthusiastic, they want to play in goal. And I've experienced it the other way, where you've got some teams where you don't have a designated keeper and kids don't want to go in goal, and you kind of got to rotate it. And I've been in other situations where we've got players in goal, but I've questioned it myself, because they're a goalie maybe because they think that's the only way they can get more minutes in the game. They're a goalie because their dad was a goalie. They're a goalie because, you know, they just want to be a full-time goalie at U9. And you're thinking, well, is that the right thing? That early specialisation? So I do think there's other things that we need to also talk about. Where if we're saying, what does a future keeper look like? Well, how do you first fall in love with the game to be a goalie?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting, just as you were speaking, I just think about, you know, and I think I mentioned this previously as well, and, you know, when it comes to being a goalkeeper, I think it's, well, what do we determine as a goalkeeper's role? And, you know, I know that it sounds like such a cliche question now, but what is the role of the goalkeeper? And I think fundamentally it goes back to what everyone often describes a goalkeeper to be, and that's a great shot stopper. Well, that's your role first and foremost. And I think, you know, I've over the years developed kind of, I guess, an observational framework myself around what a goalkeeper should and shouldn't be doing. And it's looking at it from the standpoint of 3 levels. And the first level is your job is to protect that goal. The second level is to, you know, to look at maintaining possession for your team. And the third level is actually looking to utilize possession to distribute effectively. And if you kind of strip it back to those 3 levels, well, every goalkeeper, as a bare minimum, should be trying to achieve level 1, which is protect the goal. And that's not something that you necessarily have to coach them to do as a mindset, if you like. Yes, the technical pieces around it. Yes, the fundamentals around what it looks like in action. Yes, you're going to need to support them with that. But another one, you know, that often, I think, doesn't get discussed enough and probably gets overlooked as a, I guess, as a foundational block, if you like. And that's your goalkeeper's ability to move. Especially at younger ages. I remember I delivered a CPD on this about a year ago. And it was basically an introduction to goalkeeping coaching. And I think I must have spent it. I didn't even realise I was doing this until after. It was a bit of an afterthought, really, in the question that came up, because, you know, we're 35 minutes into this session and all you've really worked on is the footwork and the movement. And I guess, without it being, a conscious thought in that moment, it was like, well, it just made sense to me, because the thing is, well, if we're working from those three levels, you know what your job is. And the one thing that we can say about goalkeepers, especially young ones, well, they're goalkeepers for a reason, because they want to put their bodies on the line and stop it from going in the net. And they're not, you know, that's not going to look perfect at under 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, let alone 15, 16 and beyond it. Right. So if they've got that mindset, they're trying to keep the ball out the net, then, you know, let them start with that. And then let's just work on how we get them to become better at doing that piece. So in my experience, when I've looked at young goalkeepers in particular, you don't have to coach them to keep the ball out the net, because that's what they're trying to do. But you need to coach them how to become better at it. And that's not necessarily in terms of how they make the saves or the hand shapes they go with and all that type of stuff. But actually, it's just getting them to move more efficiently, because, again, from my experience, I'd say that a lot of young goalkeepers, they often, they might make a save here, they might make a save there, but typically they make saves in and around themselves, and the dives, especially if they're coming, you know, coming in at a young age in goalkeeping, they don't really dive either. They just drop, and it's almost, well, if they're gonna drop and they don't understand when they could or when they can't dive, how about we just get them better at moving into line with the ball? And I think the way to look at it is almost, I mean, a visual that I always give young goalkeepers in particular is just think about yourself as being in a box. And if you can get your box in behind the line of the ball on its route to goal, if you like, then you're in a good space. And the only time you need to leave the box is when you can't move your feet quick enough to get that box into line of it. So then you're now thinking, okay, well, start moving your feet along. And you know that line that we're talking about there is that line between the middle of the ball and the center of the goal. And once they start to go down that line, they start to understand, okay, well, when might I need to dive? When might I need to just stay on my feet? Because there's plenty of times where I see young goalkeepers in particular diving when they don't need to be. So I spent the first 30 minutes of that CPD just getting them to work on how to become more efficient movers in the goal. Because like I said, their mindset already is around, I need to keep this ball out of the net. Now, because I'd worked on that piece around them moving, and I'd really focused and challenged them on how to kind of move their feet better and give them some support around what that looks like, we ended up being able to broach into level two, which is now maintaining possession. Because what was happening in the first instance, where they were just focusing on protecting the goal, actually by layering on the foundation of, right, can we get into line of the ball more often? You're now in a better position to actually be able to hold onto the ball and potentially make catches. Which is, again, another thing that, in my opinion, gets often overlooked and oversighted for a lot of coaches when it comes to young goalkeepers and their ability to actually catch and maintain possession of the ball. 9 times out of 10, you're not praising the goalkeeper on being able to catch the ball. You're praising them on being able to shot, stop, and keep the ball out of the net, which is fantastic because fundamentally that's their job. But the challenge I always throw to goalkeepers in particular is, if that's your job and everyone who plays in goal does that, what's going to separate you? And this is where the three level kind of framework comes in, is can you protect the goal, can you maintain possession, and can you look to distribute it effectively for your team? And you know, I use that as a bit of a framework to kind of highlight the idea of, you know, what are the 1% that you're gonna have that the next goalkeeper that you might come up against might not have, and how does that then provide an advantage to your team in a way that you can utilize it to your benefit. So I mean, those are just some thoughts that came out of you off the back of what you just said. I don't know if you've got any questions.
No, bro. Just thinking up how that, you know, it poses a question to everyone that what good goalkeeping look like. Because you're right, we only praise certain types of behaviour, but there's a lot more to it. What does really good goalkeeping look like? And can they stay with their feet? I was having this debate with our goalie coaches where they're really wanting them to show the elaborate, wow, top hand save, he's diving, he's spreading. And I'm like, and they said, oh, but you know, so I won't use the kid's name because someone listens, but so and so, all he ever does is comes out, he's constantly using his feet.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals. Save big money
at Menards. Constantly kicking the way and blocking it, and he just wants to tackle everyone like that, but we want him to use his hands more. And I said, okay, has he been beaten yet with that strategy? Well, not really, no, but he needs it. So was it successful? Yeah. Okay, so what's the problem? And it just made me think, like, we might have this traditional view on what good goalieing looks like, but if they can still prevent the ball from going in the back of the net, that's okay for me.
And I think you're spot on, and I think that's all that matters, right? At the end of the day, it goes back to the same framework I'd use with outfield players. Set you an objective and see what you come up with as a process or a solution to that. And if you can get there in your own way, then, you know, why am I bothered? Because for as long as it's been successful, or it doesn't mean it's perfect. It doesn't have to be perfect, but for as long as it's been successful, it's not a problem, is it? And I think that's probably the best way to look at it. But I'm conscious, Johnny, you had your hand up as well. So I don't know.
Yeah, Johnny, come in.
You're still on mute, mate. You there, Johnny? It's not even Johnny, it's Paddy. Apologies, Paddy.
Hey, lads.
Apologies, how are you?
That's right, mate. Oh, good, mate. I was just thinking around something Jared said about, you know what I mean, these sessions where you see coaches with having them jumping in and out of objects or whatever. So if you're in grassroots football, would you encourage kids to seek out like plyometric training or martial arts or other type of sports that could, you know, improve their athletic capability, especially in goal? I just wonder what you thought about that type of thing.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. And I think that comes back to the point around, you know, what does functional look like? What does real look like? I mean, and then I asked that question there earlier, how are they entering the game? If they're playing multi-sports, if they're playing basketball, if they're doing other karate, whatever, there's going to be fantastic transfers, isn't there? I mean, we've actually got the data, haven't we, where there's goalies that didn't actually specialise early. A lot of them played rugby.
Yeah,
played some other sports, and then they transitioned into being a decent keeper. So 100%, I think my beef is with products and people who advertise themselves as one-to-one specialist coaches, and they do all this elaborate designs and drills that really just are going away from what do they actually need. But if kids can do other sports, multi-sports, I think it's a huge benefit. And then the question just becomes of at what point should they specialise? Typically, I mean, over here, we normally say around 14, 15, you might start to think about at least one, try and pick one. You know, if there's one that, plus obviously over here in the US, it's pay to play. So there's a cost element there as well, which is a huge factor. Yeah. Where it's different to the UK, although I know there's elements where you can pay. But yeah, to answer your question simply, yeah. Karate, basketball, handball. I mean, handball has a lot of, and I think actually going to that point as well, so thinking about the game, don't steer too far away from the game, but if we're developing that goalkeeper, why can't we design environments that incorporate different size balls or even rules that exist in basketball or certain games that we look at handball and how they manipulate the hands and things like that. Use that in training. With the players for goalkeeping, because there's going to be transfer, isn't there?
I did a session in Brazil one time for some goalkeepers, and they thought I was mental. I had golf balls, tennis balls, like size 2 futsals, and then regular size footballs. I was lobbing golf balls at them. They thought I was out of my mind. But yeah, it's you got to kind of get creative with goalies because they are pretty mental. So.
Yeah, I think just to add to that as well, I think it's really important to understand, you know, not just what are we doing with it, but what are we trying to achieve and how do we know it's working? How do we become a bit better at assessing whether it's actually having a benefit? And I think that's part of the challenge. Just, you know, whether that's working with goalkeepers or outfield players, I think it's just, what am I doing? What am I actually trying to achieve here? What's going to aid me in getting there? So, you know, looking at using different size balls and all that sort of stuff is great. But I think it's just really pinning down your rationale behind why you're doing it and how you can evidence that it's actually having an impact. Mm-hmm. And not just let me try this and see where it goes. And I think there is part of that. There is definitely part of that. You have to be willing to experiment. You have to be willing to look at different strategies and ways of working. But what do my goalkeepers need? And I think one of the biggest things I've learned, whether it's, you know, and I learned this actually through working with goalkeepers, but it just applies itself to everything really, is, well, what's comfortable for that person? And then challenging what's comfortable for that person from a perspective of identifying whether it's comfortable because it's what they know and what they've always known, or whether it becomes uncomfortable because it's not working. And I think that's a really good way to kind of start to assess and frame some of the stuff that we're doing, because there's going to be things that we do with certain players that might not be right for them. But actually, is it not right for them from their perspective because it's something different to what they've always been known or what they've always been told? Or is it just actually this probably isn't an efficient way of working for that person based on their makeup? So just a couple thoughts around that. I'm not sure if you've got anything you want to layer on top of that, Gerard, or Paddy, if you've got any response to that.
I think it depends what environment you're working in, though, doesn't it? I mean, if you're in the academy environment, it's going to be a lot along the lines that you're saying. I mean, if you're in grassroots environment, you're a lot more limited with the time that you're spending with the players. So a lot of what we've been very lucky at Oxford City with these JPL teams and goalkeepers, but they were always in our sessions in particular, they were always involved in all the outfield practices and sessions, because you got to figure 80% of the time nowadays goalkeepers are using their feet. So you just want them to be comfortable left foot, right foot, and, you know, that type of thing. I mean, specializing, I think, you know, it pertains more, I think, to the academy environment, really. I mean, I don't know what you think about, you know, the differences between, you know, if you're training grassroots goalkeepers as opposed to academy goalkeepers. I mean, I know fundamentally it's, you know, they got the same responsibilities, but time-wise and facilities-wise, you're going to be under a lot more constraints with the grassroots lads.
Yeah, I get where you're coming from. I'd actually challenge that, though, Paddy. I think, you know, this is where, for me, especially working in coach development, coach education in particular, where I think, and I'm not saying this is what you're doing, but I do think that, you know, comparing the environments of a grassroots environment to that of an academy, if you like, it, in my opinion, can often be a cop-out for coaches to say, hey, I'm just going to let the kids rock up and play. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's like, well no, because they don't need you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
The job is to coach them to become better players or better goalkeepers or whatever they're trying to develop themselves in. So focus on doing that. And that shouldn't be determined by whether you're in a grassroots or an academy environment. Yes, what you can do with them and what, you know, the time you have with them, the resources you may have might be limited and dependent on those environmental factors. But fundamentally, your job remains. Your job is there to provide an environment in which these players can continue to develop. And as a coach, you have a fundamental part to play in that process. And I think that there is a really kind of, you know, sticky line that people try and tread on when it comes to this type of thing. And I think in many respects, it is a bit of a cop-out to say, oh, well, like I said, just rock up and we're going to set up an environment where they can have fun. It's like, well, they can have fun without us. So, what, you know, that's not your job. Like, your job is to make sure it's safe and that they're still learning and developing within the process. And I think, and I say that, and it might come across as a little bit harsh, but I say that to make the point that if your sole objective is just to be fun, then how much are you stretching yourself as a coach to suit the needs of those players and make them better? Mm-hmm. And if they don't have an ambition to want to become better, well, how much work have you done to identify whether that's because of what they've been conditioned to believe in what they can and can't achieve. Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%, mate. I mean, like I said, we were very, very lucky at Oxford City where the first team coaches were putting on sessions, specialty sessions for the keepers as well, like once a week. And in our sessions, there was a lot of emphasis around the goalkeeper and the position and being involved with the play. So, yeah, I mean, I understand what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, I guess it could be a bit of a cop-out if you're not influencing that player and making a difference in that player's development. 100%, mate.
I've got some thinking out loud. So, can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
So, and just, I'd love to get your thoughts on this as well, Paddy, but so, when we talk about developing the future keeper, and we've got that debate of grassroots and academy, I'm going to be a bit, I'm not trying to be mean, and this isn't to you, I'm posing this to anyone listening. Are we doing the kids a disservice when they come into academy environments where that we're allowing them, because we're facilitating the environment, we're in control of the environment, they come into ours, we've chosen them to play on a team that we've selected, so I'm talking about academy, and they're going to be in goal, knowing that their profile isn't going to fit the profile for them to have a career in the game or the first team. So I've seen players where you know they're going to be 5'9", 5'7". I personally don't have an issue if someone's not 6'4" or whatever. I think it's funny how we're probably having a pop at academy goalkeeper coaches. There's only a few in the country that are quite tall. A lot of them are smaller than me. And yet they all want fucking, pardon my French as well, but they all want bloody 6'7" giant monsters and they're 5'7" themselves. It's laughable. But my point is, to really be serious, is we've got these kids coming into our environment and we're saying to them, hey, you're going to be the goalie at U10, U12, U whatever, academies. But we know they've got no chance of being a goalie. Are we doing them a disservice? And we should be going, well, actually, so there's a positive of they can get the environment and they can learn and be a part of an academy. And I get all that and travel on trips and get a medal and I get it. But if they're going to come through our pathway and we've specialised that they're a keeper, but we know that they're never going to have a career, or it's going to be very difficult for them and unlikely, more than the stats are telling, are we potentially robbing them of an experience? Should we even have them in the academy to develop the future keeper? Or should those boys and girls be told, do you know what? I know you want to be a keeper, and that's great, but based on where you're at, it's probably better you need to get some other skills, and we're going to have you in these positions as well. I don't know. Because a grassroots is participation. I define the levels of competition in sort of three categories, just to keep it super simple. You've got grassroots, development, and elite. Grassroots is, there's not an emphasis on winning. Winning's okay, like important, but it's not at the detriment of learning. Everyone's involved. It's the game for everyone. And we're creating enrichment environments. Development is that bridge where it's just above grassroots at any age and stage, but it's a bit more formalized training, right? There's more structure. There's more emphasis on a little bit more on performance, but you're not quite at the elite level. And then elite is, as I'm referring to, these academies, C of E's, or first teams, where it's, boom, it's performance-based, and we're judged on that. Well, if we recognise that those kids are in grassroots and development, and they're coming into our environment because we picked them to be an elite, are we potentially doing them a disservice if we know that they're not going to be a future keeper? I don't know.
But most of the, I think with the Cat 1s and what they have at their disposal, they'll know if the kid's got the genetics to be 6'1", 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", because they'll be, what do they measure? Something, a bone in the wrist or something.
Yeah,
I forget what it is.
We've done that. We've measured the wrist, you know, growth and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. Because one of our lads that we had, he went into West Brom, had some difficulties there, came back out. He's at Repton now, and he's about 6'4", 6'5". We always knew he was going to be that height, but he'll end up in the game at some level. What that is left to be determined, but you can tell he's a goalie. There's other lads where scouts have come in. We had, don't know if any of you remember, Andy Marriott, goalkeeper. His lad played with us, and he was a, you know, little stocky lad, and had to point out to the scouts that were attending, you might want to go and have a look at that lad because his dad's an ex-Premier League professional goalkeeper. And I said, just because of his size now, I said, the apple's not going to fall far from the tree. So, and he ended up getting signed by Oxford United. So, but it's, I guess it's a tricky one, like you said, with the professional game or professional academies, where the higher end, they are going to know genetics and where that player is going to end up.
Yeah, and obviously there's always time where it doesn't always work out like that. I mean, we had one of my last clubs where they thought he was actually going to be small based on the predictions, mm-hmm. but they forgot that his brother was the same. And they actually released his brother, and his brother ended up having an unbelievable growth spurt late, mm-hmm. and ended up being a big boy. So they were like, they learned from the mistake, and they're like, look, his brother did this. Maybe we should give the boy a chance. We know he's not in the top. They gave the boy a chance. He actually ended up overtaking the number one and ended up growing, and it was a success story. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, there's always deviation. It's interesting. Sorry, Yaz, you got your hand up.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, it's a bit of a tricky one, right? Because the thing is, let's be honest. I think you're spot on. I think if we're being brutally honest about it, there probably is a bit element of disservice taking place. But I think the way that people would justify it is, well, they're getting an opportunity at an academy. Yeah, but you know this kid's got no chance. So that's one aspect of it. I think the other side of it is that, if we're being brutally honest again, is parent hit 9 times out of 10 or 99 times out of 100 even, parent hears, oh, this academy wants my kid. They're jumping at the opportunity, even if they've got no chance of progressing. Because 9 times out of 10, look, it's hard enough to find goalkeepers as it is. You know, never mind the limited number of people that actually play in goal. How many of them actually play in goal and, you know, go above and beyond what I said was, you know, the level one earlier, which is just protecting the goal and actually have those other attributes. So how many people then fall into that level two that I gave, which is about maintaining possession and being able to effectively hold on to it? And then even fewer that can actually do all the above and then distribute. Now, if you then look at the level three piece around distribution, how many goalkeepers have we seen in the past and even present that have gone from being outfield players into the goal, who have already got some of those capabilities? So now you marry that up with level three and level one, with their understanding that their job is to protect the goal. All you really got to do to them is coach them on the level two piece, which is about how to actually securely maintain possession of the ball and then utilize the distribution attributes they've already got. Now all of a sudden you're limiting that pool of goalkeepers that are going to make it anyway. So yes, there is definitely a disservice element to it, but you know, as a young child, as a parent who doesn't know any better, you're probably going to jump at the opportunity regardless. And I think that's probably the real challenging part here, right? And just managing that expectation, managing, you know, that whole journey for the player and getting them to understand where they're at on that journey. And the reality is this as well, Gerard. Sometimes, I've seen it myself and I've been involved in situations where this has happened. They would rather take one of the players in the groups that they currently got and encourage them to become a goalkeeper before even extending it out wide. Does that make sense?
And we've done that. I've seen it happen. It just, we are leading them up a garden path, though, aren't we? Unless we're honest, and that's where you have to be transparent as a coach, to be honest with the parents.
A 110%. So I think in terms of developing that future goalkeeper, I think probably the key takeaways for me is just don't forget about the past and present, because those things, what are the things that have maintained consistency throughout the changes of the game, whether it's been through the way the goalkeeper is expected to play, whether we're looking at a situation now where we are expecting the goalkeeper to do a lot more in possession than they previously had been. But again, if that's your model and that's the way you want it to work and you're really focused on developing this future goalkeeper, it's just about how you utilise the goalkeeper in those sessions the same way you would your outfield player. Don't let your goalkeeper just be wasted away as just a body in the goal. Give them an opportunity to develop on some of the other capabilities that they can develop just as much as the outfield players if they're given the right opportunities to do so. So I don't know what your key takeaways are from this one, Gerard.
Well, there's loads in there. I mean, ultimately, we've got to have a profile for what we're looking for. We've got to think about what the idea is. What's the player look like? And then how can we go on a journey with them to develop them? But they've got to, how does it fit within our game idea, within our game model? Because that's going to influence your practice design. And does the practice design, are we preparing them to train or are we preparing them for the game? Because that's my big thing, is that a lot of the developing the future goalie, a lot of the goalkeeper training sessions are preparing goalies for the training session, the demands and the intensity of getting multiple shots at you versus the demands for the game. And can we make those situations as game-like as possible so that the goalkeepers have to search for information if it's a moving ball, if it's announced, if it's unannounced. I mean, we haven't talked about that, but if we're looking at the detail within the practice activity, what activity designs are you doing? Is it where they know what the service type is and they know what to expect and they know where it's coming from? And how does that develop decision-making? Or is it that something's unannounced? Something, whether it's the service type or the practice structure, something is not clear. Or is it pure life? And we just don't know what's going to happen because it's so game, you know? And just the pluses and minuses of that. So I think we've got to think about all the time, what does the activity look like to meet the needs of the players? But no, really good conversations, isn't it, Yaz?
100%. Joe, I'm just conscious, obviously, it is a CPD opportunity for people to get an hour of CPD for it. Just maybe just a bit of insight around how they can access that.
Yeah, so anyone who's interested, we'll share a link as we always do. Or if you've, I mean, you should all have the link from before. We've got a lot of returners. And again, you're going to complete a short reflection, which is key takeaways, things that you maybe swirl around. There might be some questions that we didn't answer, and that's okay. So if you do have any questions where you're thinking about something, put that in the reflection. And even if you want to put it in a DM or in a chat message to this thread, you can do. And myself or Yaz or anyone who's a part of these spaces, a part of our community, can answer and keep the conversation going. But for the reflection piece, you're going to submit a short reflection, which normally takes around 2 minutes, and that'll make you eligible for the hour CPD. And then this is part of a series that we're doing with Middlesex FA on developing the goalkeeper. So again, we've got a webinar next Thursday. Really make sure that you sign up for that. More details to follow, and that'll be a great opportunity to gain some further insights.
A 100%. And for those guys that, you know, are unsure about how to access that, obviously, Joe, you'll share the link in the description, in the comment section shortly. And I'll be posting up a link for anyone who wants to attend and register with a CPD that we've got coming up next week as well. So that'll be a two-hour webinar, which is obviously FA accredited as well. But no, slightly different time today due to scheduling, really. But we'll be back next week when we launch the next series of just our next series, really. But for now, thank you for engaging in this one so far around developing the goalkeeper. We've got a webinar coming up next Thursday. Please make sure you're following us. Make sure you share. And if you haven't caught the start of this conversation, you can always listen back to it, both here on X or on the Coaches Network podcast. Make sure you're following us. Make sure you're sharing. And hopefully look forward to seeing you guys even on the webinar or back next week on the Spaces, guys. Take care, everyone. Well, there you have it, guys, another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at the Coaches Network or on Twitter at the Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.